Blog Talk Radio.
Last night I saw a lunar eclipse in the sky. Then something happened in my mind's eye. I saw you in a whole different light. Clearly, really, it's not that I want you to change. It's more that I want you to stay the same.
Oh, and I really want you to stay the same. I want you to stay right here with me. I'm Bonnie D. Graham, a.k.a. Radio Red. Yes, it is still looking red. A lot of sunshine here in New York. Still hot out, trying to get the garden to grow. Too much heat. What can I tell you? We just added Miracle-Gro to the mix, and let's see what happens. This is my little corner of the world on Monday nights. We call ourselves Read My Lips Radio. If you've seen the logo, those are some darn red lips. Photoshop, thank you very much for adding the extra lipstick. But I'd like you to listen for the next hour because I have two. I think they're brilliant authors. They're both gentlemen today. We're going to be speaking with Gary Stone, who's calling from Australia, and Bill Seagraves. We'll find out where in the U.S. he's calling from. The topics are on the financial side, but it's not going to be over your head because I've asked Gary Stone, who is the author of a wonderful book called Blueprint to Wealth, Financial Freedom in 15 Minutes a Week. Who doesn't want that? I've asked Gary to translate a lot of his concepts for me and for all of you about the stock market, the ups and downs, why the stock market, what kinds of mutual funds are you in? Why are you in retirement funds when maybe you could do it better yourself? He's going to talk about why the S&P 500 is a damn good index and maybe you should be there instead of other places. He's going to talk about outperforming the market, even Mr. Buffett and other people. What are some of the percentages and the odds and the outcomes? So we're going to learn a lot together from Gary Stone. Laura, our lovely lanky Laura Legs, our most loyal listener, that's a lot of L's. Listen up, Laura. I think you and your new friend might appreciate a lot of this information. I'm planning to learn from Gary. And again, his book is Blueprint to Wealth, Financial Freedom in 15 Minutes a Week. Second part of the show, we're going to be welcoming a gentleman named Bill Seagraves, just like it sounds, S-E-A-G-R-A-V-E-S. His book is right here on the table in front of me, Be Your Best Boss, Reinvent Yourself from Employee to Entrepreneur. Hey, everyone, if you have any thought of leaving the constraints, the handcuffs of corporate America, whether you're young, whether you're old, Bill has some great ideas for how to figure out how to be brave, how to take the knowledge you already have from your job and parlay it into something, a one-person company, being the boss or manager of a few, buying a franchise. He and his wife did that. They left corporate America. They're very happy. They have a great website we'll talk about in that in a minute. And we're focusing mostly on mid to late career employees. You might be retiring or toying with the idea. I'm not even close yet, and I'm almost a leading-edge baby boomer, but I love my job. Or you might be worrying about job security. You know, that old ageism thing that companies are not supposed to do, not supposed to talk about. Well, it happens. Downsizing, tightening up, lean, mean companies running you know how, tightening the ship, and all of a sudden you're the one facing, oh, we don't need you anymore. Well, maybe your career is not over. It's time to use what you know to start a new one, a new phase, a new chapter. And Bill has some great ideas on how to fund that. Just put in the corner of your mind 401k self-directed. I think that's what it's called, and Bill will tell us all about that in the second half of the show. Now, let's see what's cooking here. Oh, I saw a movie on Netflix the other night that I didn't even realize I hadn't seen, but when I saw it come up in the lineup, I knew American Beauty was Kevin Spacey. Oh, I think Allison Janney had a very, very tiny role. Lots of interesting people in the movie. Annette Bening was fabulous. Spacey was out of space. Fabulous movie, and I had never seen it before. So now I'm among those who have seen and appreciate American Beauty. It was 1999. Wow, have the years gone by. Let's look at our birthdays, famous birthdays for August 29th. I have to do a shout-out to Tani Gertner-Dietsch, who I grew up with Tani. Tani and her sister Ronnie around the corner from me and my late sister Kay. We all grew up in Douglaston, New York, and Tani and I and some of the other girls turn ladies from the neighborhood are all on Facebook, and we're playing words with friends. So Tani and your late mom, Rini, happy birthday, August 29th. And here are the real famous ones. We've got Carla Gugino, the actress born today, Rebecca De Mornay. I think Risky Business might have been her movie with Tom Cruise. Michael Jackson, the late and very great singer, actor, born in 1958. Today, Robin Leach, homes of the rich and famous. If you listen to Gary Stone and Bill Seagraves, you might be able to afford a home and be the rich and famous. Let's see, Elliot Gould, nay, Goldstein, actor born today. I think he was married to Barbara Streisand early on. John McCain, the politician in 36. Isabel Sanford, born in 33. Richard Attenborough, the actor. It goes on and on. See who else we've got here. George Montgomery, born today. Ingrid Bergman. They're not sure if she was born in 1915 or 1918, but that's the way it is on famous birthdays. Barry Sullivan, the actor, and Oliver Wendell Holmes, the physician and author, all born today. And Laura, we are so happy for your joy. Let's just leave it at that. So now it's time to bring on my first guest. He is Gary Stone, calling from Australia, and his book is Blueprint to Wealth. And I'm going to learn along with our listeners. Gary Stone, welcome to Read My Lips. How have you been, Gary?
I've been very well. Thank you for having me on, Bonnie.
I'm delighted. Are you a real Aussie? Is this the real deal, this wonderful accent I'm hearing, Gary? Don't want to embarrass you, but I have to know.
Wow, yes. It's a little bit scary for me, but yes, I am.
What part is scary? My saying, is this an Aussie accent, or you're being an Aussie?
Well, being an author, I think it's, I've read, obviously, hundreds and hundreds of books, and suddenly now I feel like I'm on the other side of the fence.
There you go. And I was asking you if you're a real Aussie. I know you're an author, so I think that word got a little messed up along the phone lines. You are Australian by birth, is that right?
No, I'm not. I'm not, actually. I'm South African by birth.
Really? Well, I'm glad I asked. Am I supposed to be discerning a different type of accent between Australian and South African? Because I'm getting them mixed up, obviously. Tell me, do you know the difference?
Yes, there is. People here in Australia do recognize that my accent is different. But when I go back to South Africa and see family, they think I've got a little bit of an Australian accent.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that very, very much. What time is it? Where are you calling from, Gary? And what time of day or night is it?
Well, I'm calling from Melbourne. It's now 9:07 in the morning. So we are 9 o'clock in the morning tomorrow for you.
Wow, and it's 7:07 p.m. here in New York. So we've got a 14-hour difference. Yep. My goodness. Well,
correct.
I'm glad it's not the middle of the night. I'm glad that we didn't have to keep you awake. So, Gary, talk to me. I'm not going to sit here and read your bio. I know you have a wealth of wealth experience, to put that word into two different contexts. Tell me, what's your background that you felt equipped you or entitled you to write a book called Blueprint to Wealth? Tell us a little bit about what you do in the financial world and how you learned what you know, and then we'll dive into the book, okay?
Well, it wasn't something that I studied. I originally studied computer science and mathematics and was in the computer industry for many years, and then did very well in that industry and got into having to invest money that I'd obviously earned. And that's where my journey started some 26 years ago, 27 years ago. And along that journey, I decided to leave the computer industry and start a business to provide services and products to individual investors, everyday investors. That I'd been one myself and gone through that journey, and then I think took on a coaching and a teaching role, and then also researched and analyzed and devised methodologies, processes, if you like, for people to do it themselves rather than rely on mutual funds to do it.
Interesting. Now, that's a good point for me to ask you. Why don't you define what is a mutual fund? Gary, why do you spend so much time in your book talking about mutual funds and the different types? Is that what our retirement funds are investing us in? Is that what our brokers are investing in? Why the importance of mutual funds?
Okay, that's an excellent question. The retirement industry in the United States is about $25 trillion invested for retirement, if you like. And about 18 trillion of that is in a mutual fund of some sort. The difference between the two, the other 7-odd trillion, is really government defined benefit schemes, which is the old way of investing for retirement, if you like, where effectively it's annuity, and when you retire, when you finish working, that the government will just pay you a monthly pension. Now the 18 odd trillion that are sitting in mutual funds is where the majority of that money is retirement money in the United States. Now, mutual funds are broken up into four main categories. There's what they call equity mutual funds. They're the ones that have a focus on are being invested in the stock market. And you have bond mutual funds. I think most people will be aware of those. And you have money market mm-hmm. mutual funds as well. And effectively, the 18 trillion is broken down across those kinds of mutual funds. And then there's another kind of mutual fund, which is one that people are aware of, but unfortunately not a large enough percentage are in them, and this is what my book's about, and that's what are index mutual funds. They're the ones that track a stock market index.
Okay, now I did mention in my opening, and thank you for that, Gary, and I want to make sure you just, what I call level set, just lay everything out really clearly and pretend I and my listeners know absolutely nothing about this, and that's what you're doing so far. I just want this to be really, really basic information. Now, and your book is, what is it, over 400 pages. It's quite a work and a lot of great information there. So let's talk about indexes, and let's talk about the S&P 500. I noticed in the amount of your book that I was able to read today, I always do my reading the same day, so please don't be offended by that, but everything is fresh in my mind that way for the show, and I noticed that you're talking about the value, the importance, just the value and the importance of understanding the S&P 500, of using that as an index, of investing in that. Why can you say it surpasses the other indices and even some of the big, most famous investment people in their companies? Let's have a little background on S&P 500, Gary, please.
Excellent, because Bonnie, that's right at the essence of it, because the equity mutual funds and the bond mutual funds, or particularly the equity mutual funds, and then there's another subset of those, if you like, called balanced funds and target date funds. So we'll talk a little bit about target date funds as well, because that's where the majority of new money, retirement money, is going in the United States. Now, an index fund, its charter in life is just to track the stock market index, and there are a few indices that mutual funds track in the United States. The S&P 500 is obviously the most well-known one, and everybody kind of hears mm-hmm. about that either on the news or wherever. There are a couple of others as well, and the one that we're going to kind of gyrate towards is the S&P 400 index, and I'll qualify that in a moment. But the research that's been done over the last 15-odd years or so backs up a statement that a gentleman by the name of John Bogle, who started Vanguard some 43 years ago,
mm-hmm.
has been saying for years, and that is that the active mutual funds, the equity mutual funds, and all the other groups of them, over the long term, underperform the S&P 500. And there's a company called S&P Standard and Poor's Dow Jones Indices, who are the custodians of these indices, who do research every 6 months, and they put this research out. And what they find is that over periods of 5 years, the number of active mutual funds whose charter in life is to actually try and outperform the S&P 500, there's only about 1 or 2% that actually managed to achieve that over periods of 5 years. Over 5 years, and over longer periods, it gravitates towards zero that actually outperform the S&P 500.
Very interesting, and I also picked up from your book, Gary, that the stocks that outperform the S&P 500 change. If you were to say, oh, great, I got these 10 stocks, and they're going to be the ones I'm investing in, and I'm counting on that for 10 or 15 years, it's not going to happen. Why do you think that is, such variability in the stocks that are able to best that particular index?
Well, the individual stocks themselves are volatile, and they move up and down. And there's from a value perspective or an intrinsic value perspective, there's reasons that occur. And anybody that's listening that may have gone down this track and read up what Benjamin Graham and Warren Buffett have done in terms of trying to pick stocks, trying to select stocks. The active mutual funds, the equity mutual funds, they've got teams of people that spend every day of their life trying to do this. And they've got all sorts of data mining and research and methodologies and all sorts of things that try and do. And ultimately, over periods of 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years plus, there's hardly any of them. In fact, the research is showing that none of them actually managed to achieve that. So what chance has an individual who's got of doing that? And even if they invest in these active mutual funds and target date funds and bond funds and that, they're almost guaranteed to do worse than the index.
Interesting. Now, I liked your statement that what chance does the individual investor have, and maybe it's the same as it is picking numbers for the lottery. It's just a crapshoot. Isn't that the best you can say that somebody like me would have of trying to figure out which stocks and pick them and create the baskets myself without the help of a broker, without the help of an investment guru, without reading your book? Let's just leave that one on the table. We'll call that dumb luck. But what I'd love to talk about is the goal of your book, and let me just read from your one sheet here, and by the way, to our listeners, all of the authors I meet at the National Publicity Summit, which is where I met Gary Stone and Bill Seagraves way back in, what is it, April, long time ago, where in a couple of weeks I'll be going back to the next summit for more authors. But where I met them, they hand me a piece of paper that has, well, their picture in the picture of their book cover, and then it has some ideas for story. So I'm looking at Gary Stone's one sheet, and here's what I'd like to talk about next, Gary. You say, quote, "Can you imagine achieving financial freedom in the time it takes to brush your teeth each day?" And that should add up, boys and girls, to 15 minutes a week. So why don't we talk a little bit about the madness in your method, or the method you have to stopping the madness. I'd rather phrase it that way. Gary, what are we supposed to do in that 15 minutes a week?
Well, Bonnie, what I'll do is I'll talk two strategies. There's even a simpler one, which is 15 minutes a quarter.
And oh, I like that. No, let's go with the 15 minutes a week, because I think you need to, and for something to be good, I think people should be willing to invest some time, and that's certainly not a lot. So go ahead, Gary.
Okay, well, the 15 minutes a quarter is a little bit more active than the 15 minutes a week strategy would be a little bit more than 15 minutes a quarter. And what I've put into the book is the research that myself and my business has done over the last 21-odd years, and that is to actually time the market. Now, when I say time the market, I'm not talking about going in and selecting and timing individual stocks. I'm talking about just focusing on the index, which we've just discussed, actually, over periods of 5, 6, 7 years and longer, there's almost like a 98-99% chance that's going to outperform all mutual funds. And what we do is we focus just on that index, and we time it, on average 2.5 times a year. And the reason we do that is we want to avoid a big bear market where, like 2008, where the S&P 500 fell 56% over a period of just over a year. And we want to extract ourselves out or take off the table the possibility of our retirement money going through one of those bear markets. And to do that, we're vigilant, and that's where the 15 minutes a week comes from, is that vigilance is required to ensure that we don't sit through a big bear market. And that's effectively what it is. We provide the tools and the processes and everything to do that. And 15 minutes a week of vigilance is not a minimum. That's probably a maximum. It would probably be less than that.
So the premise is that they're going to use the tools that your company offers, correct?
Correct.
Okay, got that. So what are they? Is this an app you put on your smartphone or on your tablet? Is this a list of stocks that you put together, your favorite industries, and you go in and you say, okay, I'm going to chart. I remember the old days of charting stocks. I used to have a friend who got me into the market about 40 years ago, and he used to keep a hard copy notebook, Gary. We didn't have the digital toys we have today. And he used to actually chart and graph every week or every night the stocks he had and showed me the physical charts on graph paper with a red line for down and a green line for up. Seriously. So what are the tools going to do for a person who gets the tools from you? What are we actually doing physically?
Bonnie, welcome to my world. That's what I've been doing for the last 27 years.
Okay.
it did start off on paper, but I haven't used paper for a long time.
Okay.
and it's all sorts of things. It's commodities, futures, stocks, indices, and everything. But you know, so I do that, and my business still does that. But effectively, the experience that I've had of getting to understand the processes required to manage a portfolio of numerous stocks is that there's this new, relatively new instrument called an exchange-traded fund, an ETF, which mm-hmm. the whole charter in life is not to try and outperform the market, it's to just match the market. And so there are ETFs that match the main indices around the world and all the exchanges around the world. And rather than now trying to chart and look at individual stocks and keep, as mm-hmm. your friend did every night, look at them, as we just get intense focus and we focus on one or two or maybe three stock market indices. And in that index, there are constituents that obviously make up the index. So we mm-hmm. effectively invest in a basket of stocks. And by doing that, all the evidence, which I've put into a lot of detail in the book, shows that just by focusing on an index, you've got a much, much higher probability of doing far, far better than putting your money into an active mutual mm-hmm. fund and doing it very effectively and very efficiently.
Gary, does this mean we're going to put our stockbrokers out of business? Because I'm very fond of my broker.
Well, you know,
I look forward to his phone calls. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. So most people have a stockbroker these days for mm-hmm. social reasons rather than actual investment reasons, because people in my world just do it all online. So that whole relationship's broken down, and we get costs down to, for instance, the one exchange-traded fund that I invest in the United States is the S&P 400 ETF, and that tracks the mid-cap stocks rather than the large-cap stocks, which the S&P 500 does, and that's commission-free. So I can get in and out of IJH, which is Indigo Juliet Hotel, IJH, the S&P 400 ETF, for zero cost. It doesn't cost me anything.
Hmm. So are we talking about people becoming day traders to do this? How do you do your own investing, or do they invest through you? Would I actually be forking over the money digitally? Would I be putting $5,000 or $10,000, that's about all I would have right now, to put it, would I be physically transferring that money into a purchase, or would it go through the tool? Would there be an account set up?
So to answer your other question, yes, we do have an app. So the app is what helps make this whole thing efficient. So it's rather than logging in and looking at charts and things like that, the app will be mm-hmm. your call to action to say, hey, there's something to do here. And you know, many weeks or months will go by before you get a call to action to say, hey, I should go and do something now. So that's what makes it very efficient. But Fidelity, for instance, which is arguably the biggest broker in the world, you mm-hmm. can get, you can, and this is not day trading, so you're doing on average 2 to 3 trades a year is the amount of activity that's required here to remove the possibility of sitting through a large bear market. So it's not active. It's certainly not day trading. It's the app will say, time to go and have a look at IJH or SPY, which is the S&P 500 ETF, and you should actually sell it now because there is a high probability it's probably going to go a lot lower. But if it doesn't go lower, then we'll just get back into it because we'll have another call to action to say it didn't carry on going lower. It looked like it might, but now it's time to get back into it, and that might be 1 or 2 or 3 months later. And then we'll reinvest our money and go with what we call the trend. So it's a trend following strategy.
Now, Gary, is this for I started talking about retirement. I think I did not retiring poor, stock market strategies. That's all well and good. But is this for people who are in their 30s and 40s, or just for people who are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s? Or is it too late for people in their 60s and 70s to do this?
No, it's certainly not. So just to talk about the demographics, the 15 minutes a quarter strategy, which is effectively just to you just buy the IJH S&P 400 index, or there are others out there as well. There's about a dozen or so that you can choose from. So this gets very intensely focused on just a few stock market indices. If you can buy and hold, for instance, the S&P 400 index, which is the one I tend to end up focusing on, the S&P 400 index has done as well as Warren Buffett has done over the last 25 years in Berkshire Hathaway.
So if I call my broker tomorrow and I tell him I want you to liquidate everything and put me into S&P 400 stocks, is he going to tell me I'm crazy, or is he going to say, I was waiting for you to make that call, Bonnie. What took you so long to catch on? What would his reaction be?
His reaction wouldn't be good.
That was a good one. Why wouldn't it be good?
Well, it's not good. I mean, the message that I've got flies in the face of the financial fraternity, because the financial fraternity live off fees, and there's a very big part of the book that I talk about how, you know, for the 20, 30, 40-year-olds, you know, just 1% compounded per annum can remove hundreds of thousands of dollars out of your, and this is where the financial freedom comes, out of your, your retirement money. So the idea for the 20, 30, 40-year-olds is to buy IJH and never sell it, and just to reinvest all the dividends which are paid quarterly, and also to take any contributions that you make to your 401k or IRA and just buy more every quarter. So that's where the quarterly effort comes in. So 15 minutes a quarter would be to take 3 months' worth of your IRA or 401k contributions, buy some more IJH, and just reinvest the dividends. If you can get a drip, which is a dividend reinvestment plan going, you would just automatically, whenever a dividend's paid, it would just buy more IJH. And just do that for the next, if you're in your 20s, the next 40 years, and you will have hundreds of thousands of dollars more. This is what all the evidence and research are showing, that not I've only done, but what S&P Dow Jones and third parties have done, that you'll have hundreds of thousands of dollars more, maybe even millions of dollars more in your retirement fund than what you would have if you'd left it in just a normal balanced 401k or target date fund.
Now, Gary, this isn't saying that our stockbrokers are bad guys or bad gals, is it? Are you saying that they are not aware of this, or that they just aren't up to date on a better way to invest? Or could they invest in the S&P 400 for me, for example? If I told my broker, I want you to carefully liquidate at the best possible prices so it doesn't impact my year-end tax bracket or a tax liability, if you will, I want you to start investing in the S&P 400. Could I do it that way, or is that not going to work?
No, that'll work. That'll work. It's just that I suspect you'll get some resistance, because if everybody did this, the financial fraternity would run dry on fees that they get from the clients, if you like, that's what it all comes down to. It comes down to fees. So what they do is they sell you a line that says diversification is good, and therefore we've got to be in bonds and stocks, and we've got to be in other asset classes which perform worse than the stock market. And they do that because the punters out there, the people who are investing, are afraid of volatility, and the financial fraternity paints volatility as a bad thing and diversification as a good thing to overcome this volatility. What I'm saying is, for long-term, multi-decade investing, is that volatility is a good thing and diversification is a bad thing. So I'm saying the exact opposite to what they're saying.
So that's the brunt of it. Wow. Now let me see here. We have time for one more question. You tell me, Gary Stone, is there anything that I should have asked you that I didn't ask? We have about 3 minutes before we turn on the microphone for Bill. Bill, you've been put on notice. Bill Seagraves, Mike will be turned on in 3 minutes, and then we will officially welcome him to Read My Lips Radio. Gary, anything I should have asked you that I didn't know that you would like to share with my listeners?
Yeah, well, we've made the point about fees, and the book makes a lot about fees, and just showing that if there's one single message that comes out of the book, is that the power of compounding over the long term, and by paying away anything between 0.5% to 2% compounded per annum in fees over 20, 30, 40 years, you know, that literally does turn into hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars for people, depending on how much they put away into their 401ks or IRAs over the years. And the whole exercise becomes one of fee minimization and minimizing diversification by going into the index rather than spreading your assets across other lesser performing asset classes. The other point is that there's a myth that the market cannot be timed. It is a myth. The market can be timed. The actual mutual funds themselves are doing it. And what they say is, but you know, you, Mr. Punter, you can't do it, or Mrs. Punter, you can't do it. Leave it to us. And by the way, pay us some fees to do that, which basically forfeits growth over many, many years. Day trading is difficult. It takes decades to learn how to day trade, in my view. But what I'm talking about, the longer the term that you trade, trade, and i.e. if you're only doing one or two or three transactions a year, or maybe even a dozen, it becomes far more simple to actually time the market than if you're trying to do it on a daily or weekly basis.
Got it. Thank you. Well, it sounds smart to me. Very interesting. And your book is available in hard copy yet, or is it? I have the digital version, which was great for me to read quickly, Blueprint to Wealth. So where can people get the actual hard copy book, Gary?
At this stage, they can go to the book's website, which is Blueprint to Wealth. That's with a double T in the middle. And if that's difficult for them to remember, so it's blueprinttowealth.com. If that's difficult for them to remember, if they're driving along in their motor car or whatever, they can just also go to fixmynestegg.com, fixmynestegg, and it'll also direct to blueprinttowealth.com.
Fix My Nest Egg. Let me spell Blueprint to Wealth. I love to spell long URLs. And Mr. Seagraves, Bill, I'm turning on your mic now, but don't say a word, Bill. We're not quite ready for you, but your microphone is live. Okay, so Blueprint to Wealth is B-L-U-E, the word blue, print, P-R-I-N-T, the word two, T-O, wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H.com, blueprinttowealth.com, and you will see Gary Stone. You'll see a picture of his book, Blueprint to Wealth, there you go, Financial Freedom in 15 Minutes a Week. Gary Stone, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. I hope it was good for you, too. And now I would like, there's a great picture of you, by the way, at your website, Blueprint to Wealth. Yes, that's you, smiling there, right, with a stock chart behind you. I like that a lot.
Yes,
in the picture. And there's also a video of you with Mr. Chicken Soup for the Soul, Jack Canfield. Very nice. Okay, so Gary Stone, you and I have a little exercise now. We didn't practice, but I think it's going to go really well because you're a man of numbers and you're very precise. So let's see how you can do this with me. I'm going to count to three, and on the count of three, we're going to say together, welcome, Bill Seagraves. Are you ready, Mr. Gary Stone? Can you do this?
Yes, I am, Bunny. Yep.
We'll see about that. Here we go. One, two, three. Welcome, Bill.
Bill
Seagraves.
Seagraves.
We sort of got it. Bill, welcome to Read My Lips. How are you, Bill?
Good evening, Bonnie, and good morning, Gary.
Yes. Morning, Bill.
Nice to have you on, Bill. So, Bill, it's your turn to chat with Gary Stone. What would you like to ask him or comment or anything that he said? Do you have any questions or comments? Please go ahead, Bill Seagraves.
Sure, absolutely. Gary, I truly enjoyed the last 30 minutes, and at some level, I think we are talking to a similar audience, different topics maybe, but I think there's a lot that you have to share. You know, I think one of the biggest questions that I had, maybe two, if Bonnie will allow me to ask you two questions.
Yeah.
First question is,
of course.
What is your reader's biggest challenge? And let me pose what I think they might be, and you can answer that, or you can take it a completely different direction. Is it traditional investing is just too complicated, or is it the time for somebody to actively manage their portfolio? Is that what keeps people from being successful?
That's a good question, Bill. In the biggest, and we didn't get time to talk about it, but there's a lot of research that I've got in Chapter 5 of the book, which is information that comes from ICI, which is the Investment Companies Institute in the United States. And they put out magnificent research. It's unbelievable. And effectively, they've got a database, I think, of 25 million people that they get all their survey data from. And what it shows is that over 80% of people in the United States are not going to be able to retire, have an independent retirement or a comfortable retirement. So I talk about the combination of comfortable, independent retirement, and that's effectively what financial freedom is at a very at the lowest level of the definition. So we're talking about millions, tens of millions of people in the United States. If they continue on their saving and investing path and the growth that they get out of their retirement money, it is not going to be enough. And so what a lot of people do is they say, well, don't worry, I'll have Social Security, will back me up. Well, you just need to spend some time looking around the internet and talking to people to show that's not a dead cert. Social Security, when you get into the 2030s, may not be able to make up the difference.
Absolutely right.
Part of the question is people have a perception that the stock market is difficult It's there's lots of jargon and it's complex, and that perception is, you know, comes from people. If you like, I've got a saying that seek first to understand before being understood, which obviously comes from Michael Covey. Covey it is, and Stephen Covey.
Mm-hmm.
And the and what people don't do, they don't even start to understand. And this whole the whole world is changing with investment, and it's changing through this simple instrument called an exchange-traded fund, which gives people access to a basket of stocks that follow the index rather than having to go into individual stocks or individual mutual funds. And this exchange-traded fund instrument is a game-changer, and it makes it infinitely more easy for people to be able to manage their own investments into the stock market.
Thank you, Gary. Bill, did that answer your questions?
It did. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Gary. And Gary Stone, I'm going to ask you to stick around. If everything's quiet on your line, I'll just leave your line open. Or if you want me to mute you, I'd be happy to. And I'm going to turn my attention to Mr. Bill Seagrave. So, Bill, welcome to the show officially. I'm looking at your book, and your book is Be Your Best Boss, Reinvent Yourself from Employee to Entrepreneur. And as I said in my opening, Bill, it's about, well, maybe you are shackled and bound and not too happy in your corporate job. Maybe you're facing retirement. What the hell am I going to do with the rest of my life? Maybe retirement is facing you because you're ready to be aged out of the workforce, or you're too highly paid, or you're too skilled, and they're not going to hire you again because you just cost too damn much compared to what young people with similar backgrounds and a little less experience can get in the are charging basically a salary. So, Bill, welcome to the show, and why don't you tell me a little bit about why you wrote this book, and then we will do a deep dive into, I'd like to start with your entrepreneurially ready quiz. I think that's a good place to start. So tell us a little bit about why you wrote the book and what your background is, Bill.
Sure. Well, my background from an educational and an early corporate career was engineering, and people will ask me quite frequently, well, how did you get to where you were having conversations on a daily basis with people considering going into business? And it really comes to the context of helping people with modeling and projections and putting the pieces and parts. So as an engineer, I'm a, you know, and what pieces fit together and how do you line them up for success? And having been in the business funding world for the last 12 years, the book is really just an outcome of, at some level, my experience. You can think of the book as an overlay of what Bill had to go through through four businesses to be successful. But it really is then enhanced with stories and examples of where people made the leap and had mm-hmm. some success, and trying to illustrate some of the key points that people going into business for themselves may face.
Thank you very much. Is it scary, the idea? What you're trying to say, I believe, in the book is that people might say, well, it's not really for me. I wouldn't know what to do. And you're saying, wait a minute. If you've been in the workforce for 10 or 15, 20 years, you have amassed experience. You have seen things. You have heard things. You have done things. And you've got a wealth of knowledge that could be tapped in your new role as your own boss, as entrepreneur. Is that the right approach, Bill? You're saying we know more than we think we know about what it would take to run a business?
Absolutely. Just like, you know, the folks that Gary is having a conversation with, they don't know what they don't know. And so the book, from the perspective of the audience that I'm trying to reach, is all about helping people understand what they don't know, give them some tools to arm them against the myths or you know, the fears that hold them back. And the mm-hmm. number one takeaway is people have had the opportunity through their career to learn about financial management, people management, project management, and a lot of those same skills are directly attributable to owning a business. Certainly there's some nuance and some talent or a skill set of to take it one step further to business ownership, but the foundation's there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bill. And before I go into the quiz, which I would really love to go through with you briefly, I want to just tell everybody what the table of contents is for Bill's book in part two and part three. May I read the titles of the chapters, Bill? I think it'd be interesting.
Absolutely.
For listeners. Okay, so number two, size matters, ha-ha, and here's what it is. You could do a company of one, you, yourself, and me, myself, and I, basically, you, you, and you, a boss of a few, a business of many, and then the question is, in part three, to build or to buy, that is the question. And Bill talks about buying a franchise, buying an existing business, building your own business, and then the big question, to partner or not, and even gets into whether you should partner with your family, your spouse, or relative, and whether you should actually hire family or friends or do business with friends. Great examples, by the way. Bill, I love the way you brought in so many case studies, and you carry the threads all the way through the book. You'll drop a little comment about a husband and wife who decided to buy a KOA campground, and you talked about a couple who are in the business of leasing or renting, I think, or maybe even selling. These are scoreboards for rodeos, and they figured out a way to do it better. And you talk about a couple that started a pickle business that got so big they outgrew their space twice and are now national, regional, global. Great successes, as well as people who bought franchises. So, Bill, let's turn to, in your book, if you don't mind, I'm on page 33, evaluate your entrepreneurial readiness. Why don't we just do this? And you say, you don't have to be an Oprah Winfrey fan to understand the value of self-awareness, and as someone likely in your late 40s or older, you've had lots of chances to get to know yourself, but that doesn't mean you know yourself as an entrepreneur. So why don't we go through the quiz, Bill? I'll read a question, and why don't you describe some of the answers and how you evaluate them? Is that okay with you?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, question number one. If you were left alone on a deserted island, you would... And, Bill, why don't you give what the options are and what the one is that would show entrepreneurial readiness, Bill?
Well, A is probably go insane from loneliness, eventually adapt to the situation, or C, be happy as a clam. And there's not really a right answer to any of these. Again, it's designed to build self-awareness. And so this first one could lead somebody down the road of where they insert themselves on that continuum you described. Do you start with a business of one? Do you want to be that lone ranger and you know, work for yourself, and you're not that people person that has to get up and be motivated by some type of interaction? And so when people are, if they were saying, I'd go insane from loneliness, that means they need to be in a situation where there's daily interactions. And if you're if you're the man in the van and you really don't have the opportunity to connect with other people, then you're not going to be a happy person, is one of the easiest examples.
Okay, good. Now let's go to, I'm not going to do all of the questions because I want to talk about a lot more with you. Let's talk about the most money you've risked in either a business venture, gambling, or another situation is, and why don't you give us the three options and what they mean, Bill?
Well, a month's wages is A year's wages is B, and more than a year's wages is C. And so what this goes towards is helping people understand, self-assess, their level of risk. You know, if you're not looking to put a lot of money in play, and at some level, going back to Gary's, there's a synergy there, but if you're not looking to do a big bet, then you need to be in some lower investment, which typically means a lower return type business. So a simpler service-based business versus a brick-and-mortar business that may, you know, cost you a couple of hundred grand to get into. And the lower cost would certainly then go towards that company of one type experience versus the if you're doing a brick and mortar, you probably are a boss of a few or business of many.
Thank you. And now let's just do one more. Let's talk about the emotional side. I think this is important. When a venture didn't pay off for you, you felt, what are the three options here? This, I think, is very telling because we all have an emotional component to how we do business. So what are the options?
Absolutely.
Bill?
So A, devastated, I never do it again. B, down for a week or so, then I bounce back. C, nothing venture, nothing gain, or on to the next venture. This question was really, if there's a 1-2 funnel out folks from being an entrepreneur? Maybe this is one that would lend towards a situation that if you're devastated when you make a mistake, then maybe entrepreneurship is not for you. Part of the success of being an entrepreneur is making mistakes. Everybody's going to make mistakes. The ability to be resilient, be able to take a step back and learn from those mistakes, that's a key success point in business ownership.
Thank you very much. And Bill, let's talk about being, rather than the company of one, let's talk about being the boss of a few. And you say your options are to buy a franchise, to buy an existing business, or to start your own business. What I love about this, these parts of the book, these sections, Bill, is that you give the pros and the cons. So it's not like we're reading a pie in the sky kind of a thing. Yeah, you got to do it. It's going to be great. Life's going to be easy. The money's going to be pouring. You actually talk about, and then you have a checklist at the end. So let's talk about the pros and cons of the few model, the boss of a few. Because, Bill, in your experience, what do people really want to do when they think of their own business? Do they really want to be the sole proprietor or the sole couple proprietor where they are responsible 24/7, 365 for every damn thing that happens in the business? Or wouldn't they rather have a small staff? What's your experience? What do you see people being interested in, Bill?
Well, I talk to people every day, and they can go either way. Some people do the introverted solopreneur. That's what he wants to do, and he goes down that road. And there's nothing wrong with that as an approach. The limitation to the solopreneur type experience is scalability. If you're looking to grow something, so the typical solopreneur ends up being successful and does his thing day in and day out, and he probably has a high probability of making a living for himself, but he's not really going to grow something of value that he can sell off in the future because he is the business in that situation. So the business of a few or a boss of a few is the first step to scalability, being able to have other people contributing to your efforts and helping you build the bottom line and grow something of substance and give you some relief in executing the business. It's not just you.
Okay, and that is frightening for a lot of people, especially older people, isn't it, Bill, having to be basically a slave to your own business where it's you and maybe one family member and you just never get away unless you're running a vacation ranch or running your own rodeo or a B&B somewhere, and even then you may want a vacation in somebody else's B&B. So let's talk about the business of one, the company of one. Would you consider a couple who retires and wants to do the business together as a full-time shared venture, would that still be a business of one, Bill, or would that be a business of a few?
I think it still qualifies as a business of one. I certainly have those conversations, and they really talk about it being us, and they're not really looking for the opportunity to invite others to participate, which is not a problem. There's people that appeals to, and running a business as a partner with your life partner, that brings on a whole nother conversation. My wife and I do it together, and so life and marriage and family, it's all together. But it doesn't work for everybody. There's the other side of that story.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of Teresa Elsie Graves here, Vice President and Co-Founder, and you are the President and Founder on your website, catchfirefunding.com, and I'll spell that in a few minutes, and you are the team, and then you have a couple of, you've got Maura and Bridget and Andrew, the client managers and consultants. Looks like a nice team. Oh, you've got more. You've got Cassie and Mandy and Chelsea, and so you are a company of a few, or are you a bigger company, Bill? How do you describe your own company?
Well, that's a great question. It certainly started as a business or a company of a few. I've got my acronyms all mixed up, but we've grown, and I really see that I've got a reasonably substantial business with the goal to take it to the next level, and so there could be another book, Business on Steroids, and so we certainly there's pieces that we were going to put in the book, but we pulled out, and they're in you know, reserve for some future opportunity. And I think we're in transition towards that. That's what my goal is. I'm in the relationship business. I'm an engineer, and I'm a bit of an introvert. But my real value of being in business, and part of the reason I wrote this book, is about the relationships that I'm in. And the relationships include certainly my spouse, who's a partner, but it includes my employees. We run I still look at it as a family business, and family values and family the flexibility of being operating a family for my employees is very important to me, so it's a very flexible deal. But it's also the relationships with the folks that are our clients or could be our clients or the folks I just happen to talk on the telephone, and we're chatting about where they're at in life, where they're going in the future. And I think that's the key. That this book's written for somebody who is at that nexus in their careers and life where things could go anyway. It could be retirement and the golf course and arts and travel, or it could be my retired and inspired client that successfully completed their career, but they're not done. They don't want to jump out of the game. They want something to keep their mind fresh and something to keep them inspired and active, and they choose business as that to do it. Or it could be that person that is no longer satisfied in their careers or got displaced out of the career force, the technology's overtaken what their specialty is, and now they're looking to take a pivot and go a different direction.
Thank you, Bill. And before we run out of time, we have to talk about the 401k, I think you call it self-directed funding from your own 401k, which is a topic that we'll touch on a little bit on Gary. Gary, I did mute you. I heard a little noise in the background, but I'm going to unmute you in about 3 minutes here so you can talk to Bill. So, Bill, talk to me. How do people take their 401k and use it as a penalty-free, tax-free way to fund their own new business, in a nutshell?
Well, sure. Context of starting a business is it requires some capital. People ask themselves the question, and generally the reason my phone rings is people are saying, how can I get the money I need for my business? Could be dip into your home equity. It could be dip into your savings. Little known situation is retirement dollars can be used to fund a business. So through normal U.S.-based 401k rules and regulations, a corporate employee participant in a corporate 401k plan can invest in corporate stock. So that Apple Computer employee through the Apple Computer 401k can buy Apple Computer stock. We just help our clients apply that same mindset to their entrepreneurial endeavor, and they can redirect rollover monies into a to-be-form plan associated with their future business and use that as the capital for getting their business started. It becomes the seed money that they invest in. To take it to the next end, I have conversations and ask the question, why are you looking at business at this time? Most people are saying, I'm looking forward to retirement. I need to get there, and I'm challenged from a financial perspective or things along those lines. And it just as a natural deal, if retirement's where you want to go and your choice to get there is through business ownership, being able to invest in your business with your retirement dollars to grow that next tax deferred is a natural outcome of the process.
Thank you very much. Bill, you're a very wise man. It sounds like you and your wife have created a business that has great demand, and people have a need for, I would say, your encouragement and your knowledge. And I love the optimism of your message, Bill Seagraves, the idea that we know more than we realize we know about doing a business if we've been in the workplace, in the workforce, in the corporate world for a certain number of years. And I know this is an approach for a lot of people when they're looking to or they're forced to change careers, when they're downsized, outsized, laid off, given that golden parachute that may not have quite so much gold in it anymore. And Gary, I open your line, by the way. And I've heard there's an approach where you take everything you've done in your past jobs and you think, how could I repackage myself and sell myself if you want another corporate job or small business job as an employee? Think about what you know, not just what you did, and think about how that would help another business. So, Bill, thank you. And, Bill, we need to give your website, and I'm going to let Gary talk to you in just a second, but is catchfirefunding.com the website you'd like people to visit, Bill Seagraves?
If you're interested in business funding questions, if that's what you have, then catchfirefunding.com is the right website. If you're interested in the book, yourbestboss.com, although the book is available to Penguin Random House book, so it's available through all of the normal, whether it's online or brick-and-mortar bookseller channels.
I didn't know there was a book site. I see it now. Your Best Boss. I'll give that one. Your Best, B-E-S-T, Boss, B-O-S-S.com. Put it all together, and you can see a picture of Bill, and the quiz is here, who I am, why did I write Be Your Best Boss, who is the book for, and why am I giving the book away for a penny? Oh, my goodness gracious, and your wonderful smiling picture. Now it's time for me to let Gary Soane talk to Bill Seagrave. So, Gary, I can give you about 2 minutes before we do what's next for both of you. So, Gary, what would you like to ask Bill?
Thanks, Bonnie. What I'll do, Bill, is try and find an overlap of being in a small business, even a sole proprietor, and what the benefits are for investing for retirement. And where my question's going here is with respect to the annual limits that you can put into your 401k or IRA.
Well, annual limits, I probably can't do that in the next minute or so, but the basic... You can put up to $18,000 a year through your contributions and through the corporation you're being employed by your business. The contribution limits can go as high as $54,000 per individual. So a spousal situation can multiply each of those by two.
So I guess where I'm going there is if you're working for a corporate, you're limited to $18,000 or $24,000 if you're over 50. But if you've got your own business through a SEP IRA or solo or individual 401k, you can go as high as $54,000. And so that's another benefit of being a sole proprietor or a boss of a few. Yep.
Yeah, and the last concept, just to those are the limitations to answer your question, but the outcome of your business, that the excess profits can go back to your 401k too through dividend contributions too that don't have any outside limitations. Mm. So those become earnings.
So that's a huge benefit to being a boss of a few with respect to investing for retirement. That was the one area I thought I'd reach on.
Yep.
And the other one, if we've got time for it, Bonnie.
Yes, 1 minute.
Is the if you're a boss of a few, the challenges of you've spoken about running a business from a people management perspective and the flexibility and scalability. Does your book touch on the marketing side of things?
It does, not in great detail. It's absolutely not a marketing book, but it talks about having the foundation from a marketing, and I believe it talks about the marketing being the engine of your book, and it needs to be a focus.
Yep.
Thank you for your thoughtful questions, Gary Soane. I appreciate that. And we're just about at the point in the show where I need to ask each of you what's next for you, some shameless promotion. So, Bill, while I have you in the hot seat here, Bill Seagrave, what's coming up for you and Teresa and your business next in your book? I can give you about 30 seconds, so talk to me.
From a life perspective, I do quite a bit of traveling. A lot of it has to do in the business acquisition, sell of a business world. So the International Business Brokers Association is coming up in November. Franchise shows on a regular basis. Big franchise expo here in Denver, Colorado. You didn't really give me that opportunity to let you know where I'm at, but I'm from a beautiful state of Colorado. most of the franchise shows will have representatives at.
Bill, do you have a favorite franchise to recommend quickly, a top two or three types of franchise industries to recommend?
You know, I don't. It's all about the experience in of the owner, and that's a big part of the book. You want to buy a business that meets your expectations and your needs from the daily life experience. So everybody's desires and needs are so diverse. I couldn't even start to tell you which ones, that somebody might on the radio be listening to, what would be right for them.
Okay, thank you. I just have to tell you a quick side note, Gary, before I get to you. I've just written my second original play. I'm filming it for my TV show tomorrow night, and it's going to have four couples performing dance routines as though they had just met for the first time at a masked ball called Dance for Romance. And I wrote the script of what they're really thinking. So they dance a minute, then they freeze. The camera goes to a one shot of her, a one shot of him, and then voiceover actors off air, off camera, are talking about what they're thinking. And in one scene, the woman says, "Oh, he's so masculine. He's so confident. He's so terrific. I bet he's a big president of a company, and he's so suave, and I bet he makes millions of dollars." And in the next voiceover, the male actor says, "Damn, I just bought those three Dancin' Donuts franchise. I can't get the smell of grease off my hands, and we're hoping Valentine's Day is good for healthy donuts with refined raw coconut oil and special kinds of Valrhona chocolate, 70%. And so I just had to tell you that, Bill. Gary, quickly, 10 seconds, what's next for you?
I'll be speaking at an international conference in Sydney. It's the International Federation of Technical Analysts. This conference is normally overseas in Japan, United States, everywhere, but it happens to be in Sydney this year.
Wonderful. Gary Stone, Bill Seagraves, wonderful to speak with both of you, and you're in luck. We only need to do the moi kiss for 25 seconds, so here we go, and I'm going to do a shout-out to everybody. Find your passion, figure out how to fund it, and go forward and be happy in life. Here we go. Gentlemen, join me. 20 seconds. More. Gary, you said you practiced. Thank you both. That was charming. Gary Stone, have a great day in Australia. And Bill Seagraves, have a great day in Denver. Sorry to nap, but I have some colleagues in Denver. I know it's a beautiful place wherever you are. I'm Bonnie D. Graham. Have a great week. And by the way, breaking news, Puma dumped Anthony. Go look it up in your news feed and see what DJT is saying about it. Oh, my. Have a great day, everyone. Have a great week. Next week is Labor Day. I will not be on the air live. We'll be back 1 week after Labor Day. I'm going away for vacation. Have a great one. Bye-bye.